welcome to this edition of Environment Matters with me, Amanda Yorworth. Environment Matters is the show that brings you news on issues of sustainability and the environment from around the district and from further afield. Coming up later, how you can join in the Great British Bee Count. But first, the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change has identified the soil as somewhere we can store carbon, therefore reducing atmospheric carbon and therefore helping us to fight climate change. But a group of scientists, including Professor David Paulson, the Laws Trust Senior Fellow at the Rothamsted Research, have recently published an opinion paper saying that the soil carbon targets that the UN have set are unrealistic. I visited Rothamsted to ask Professor Paulson why he had felt it necessary to alert the UN to this problem. So, Professor David Paulson, thank you very much indeed for agreeing to talk to me. So, how do we get carbon into soil, and what are we going to have to do differently to increase the amount of carbon in global soils?
Well, the main way that carbon gets into soil is through plants, because plants grow, they take carbon dioxide from the air through photosynthesis, and plants grow, and okay, we often harvest them and take most of that carbon that's now in organic matter away, but some of it goes into the soil through roots, and the roots sort of exude other chemicals too. So some carbon from the air gets into soils through plants. Now that goes into the soil, a lot of it is decomposed by microbes in the soil, but a little bit of it, some of it, is sort of built into organic matter in soil, you might call it humus, and some of that is quite stable. So that's the main way we get organic matter into soil.
It's just growing plants, literally.
Growing plants.
So how do we increase? Do we just have to grow more plants then if we want to increase the amount of soil carbon?
That's one way, yeah. I mean, also, I should say, the other way that we can get carbon in soil is by adding manures and organic, what you might call wastes. I don't like the word wastes, but byproducts.
Yeah.
So that's the two ways, really. Yeah, well, how do we get more into soil? Well, one is, yes, indeed, to grow more plants. So things like establishing new forests is a perfectly good, very sensible thing to do. It's taking carbon that would otherwise be in the air, getting it into trees. Some of that goes into the soil. But of course, there's a limit to how much we can do that because we need to use our land for growing food.
Yes.
We've got 7.5 billion people in the world now. It'll soon be 9 billion. And so where you can grow more trees, that's a good thing to do. And the fact is that the amount of organic matter in the world's soil is very large if you add it all up. It's about twice the amount of carbon that there is currently in this carbon dioxide in the atmosphere.
Right.
So it's a big stock, so sort of what happens to it matters whether it goes up or down.
Yeah. So currently, are global soil carbon levels increasing or decreasing?
Well, it's a bit of each, but on the whole, probably decreasing for two reasons. One is that still deforestation is going on, mostly in tropical regions, in order to clear more land to do agriculture. So a soil that's under a forest would generally have quite a high organic matter and therefore carbon content. You clear the trees, don't grow them anymore, and go to ordinary agricultural crops. Organic matter in that soil will tend to go down. And also, unfortunately, we're draining peat wetland soils. Now, these are very, very high in carbon, huge stocks of carbon. And what I would like to do is just see those soils left alone. Don't touch them. Keep them as they are. But unfortunately, we are draining them. And I have to say that in the long term, the sort of intensive agriculture we do tends to make soils go down from a more natural level to a lower level.
Okay. So the reduction in soil carbon, it has basically two elements, I suppose. It's the reduction of the natural systems, like the forests and the swamps, but it's also the fact that our agricultural systems are not generally increasing soil carbon.
That's true, indeed.
Now, you've said that you think that the 0.4% increase in soil carbon every year for 20 years is unrealistic.
Yeah.
I suppose from what you've just said, that's not a surprise. But what I mean, I suppose, why do you think that target was set then?
Well, I mean, I got together with some people from around the world and we wrote a little sort of opinion article about this. And we did it with some trepidation because as soil scientists, we don't want to criticise anything that's good for soil.
Yeah.
And getting more carbon, that means organic matter, into soil is always a good thing, partly because it improves the quality of the soil, better aggregate structure so plants can grow better, water can be held in it better, all that sort of thing. And secondly, it's true that if we can lock more carbon into organic matter in soil, we will slow climate change. So it all goes in the right direction, so it's all good. But we think this target is just over... a bit exaggerated. It's a bit optimistic. That's really our issue.
Right. So do you think it's not possible, or do you think that it's unrealistic, I suppose?
Well, I think it's unrealistic, really. The idea came during it was put forward by the French Minister of Agriculture and backed up by scientists in France, which are all good scientists, and it was proposed at the Paris Climate Conference in 2015. And the idea was that this was one way of slowing climate change.
Yeah.
Now, so that's good. And the argument was that if you were to increase carbon in all the world's soils at the rate they suggested, every year for 20 years, that amount of carbon would in fact roughly equal the amount of carbon in CO2 from fossil fuel burning.
Right.
So it sounds sort of great, you know. But there's two things. One is that actually achieving that within practical agricultural systems is difficult. It's worth aiming at, but I don't think there's any chance we can reach that rate of carbon accumulation. Also, when you're increasing organic matter in soil, it's not only carbon. The carbon goes along with nutrients like nitrogen and phosphorus. And the point that we made in our little discussion paper was that, well, if you're going to lock up carbon, you're going to need to lock up nitrogen as well.
Right.
And that won't always be there at the right place in the right time. So that becomes a limitation.
Right.
And the other thing is that we are looking at the rates of carbon increase in the long-term experiments we have here at Rothamsted in Harpenden. And if you do really quite drastic things, like adding lots of manure or changing your agricultural system really quite a lot, then you can achieve that rate, that 4 per mil rate,
yes,
easily. But if you're carrying on with fairly normal agriculture, it's quite difficult to increase soil carbon at that sort of rate.
Right.
Anything you can do to go in that direction is good, but that rate just seems quite optimistic, shall we say.
Right, okay. So as far as you're concerned, yes, definitely worth aspiring to.
Yep.
Probably not achievable. And we really have to look for carbon reductions in other areas.
Absolutely. I mean, anything we can do to lock up carbon in the soil through this sort of thing, it's called carbon sequestration, is good. But I just worry a bit that policymakers might latch onto this and say, oh, that's fine then. We can carry on burning coal and oil and natural gas.
Yes.
And it'll all be fine and it's locked away.
Right.
And that's not true. We can lock a little bit of it away, some of it, and let's do all that we can, but we've got to concentrate very much on cutting down our emissions and keeping the big stocks that are in our swamps and our forests as well.
Excellent. Professor David Powelson, thank you very much indeed.
And you can find more information about that in the environment page of the Radio Verulam website. Now, I love watching bees on flowers outside my dining room window. Their energy and their focus must be the envy of any employer. And even better, I found a way to turn my idle bee watching into useful science. Friends of the Earth have got together with Bug Life and Waitrose to launch the Great British Bee Count for another year, and they want our help. Now, Bees campaigner at Friends of the Earth, Mike Birkin, explained. Thank you very much indeed for joining us. So we know that bees are in trouble. We've heard quite a lot about that. But how can counting bees help?
Well, we need to build up an accurate picture of what exactly is happening with bees. So we want to know which species of bee are thriving, which aren't doing so well, whether they're doing better in one particular kind of place as opposed to another. So, for instance, there's been a great deal of concern about bees, and gardeners from around the country have responded to this, we think, very well. Lots of people have started gathering the information and started planting more bee-friendly plants in their gardens and making space for bees in other ways. Is this starting to make a difference? Is this starting to be reflected in the abundance of bees in people's gardens?
Okay.
Are bee numbers in people's gardens holding up, whereas in other places they're in decline? That would be a really interesting sort of thing to know about.
Yeah.
And also, you know, we're still... there's still basic information to be collected about which kind of bees do frequent which sort of areas. So we've got over 250 species of bee in Britain. Our Great British Bee Count, we're only concentrating on around 20 of them. But nevertheless, even for those 20 species, if we could start to build a better picture of are those kinds of bees more likely to be found in wasteland, in parks, on allotments, in the open countryside. That, again, is useful information that helps us target efforts to reverse the decline in Britain's bees.
Fantastic. So there's lots of information that you still need in order to work out what's the most effective way to help bees then. So if we think, yeah, sounds like a good idea, what do you want us to do as part for the Great British Bee Count?
Well, the way it works fundamentally is that you can download a free app onto your phone. So just search for Great British Bee Count. Did it myself on Friday, only took a few minutes. And once you've got that app, you've then got the means of being able to send us a record. And that fundamentally just consists of like where you are, when you were, and what kind of bee that you saw. They also want to know what kind of area you were in. Was it in your garden? Was it in the local park? And what the weather was. And once you've told us that, you know, we've then got a record that is of some use.
Right.
We are also encouraging people to take photos of the bees that they see. This is partly because it's more fun. You get to learn something about the bee, but also it enables us to verify your record. So if we don't have a photograph, you know, we've no means of independently checking that your record, you've correctly identified the bee that you saw.
Right.
So the photograph is extremely useful in adding to the value of the record.
Right, I see. So actually, if we don't know what kind of a bee it is that we're looking at, actually the photograph will communicate that, so we don't need to worry too much. Now, I took part in the Great British Bee Count last year, and it has been said I did find taking photos of bees quite difficult. They sort of move around quite quickly. Do you have any tips for making that a bit easier?
Yeah, they do move around quickly, don't they? I think the number one tip has to be patience. So sit and observe your bees first and watch what they're doing and which flowers they're visiting and how long they stay on each one. I think it's quite possible that early morning and evening are better times as well. Bees will be a little bit slower when they're in the cooler times of the day.
Yeah.
So you might find bees you know, easier to photograph at those times if they are on the wing. So, you know, bees might, for instance, bumblebees, they need a bit of time to warm up to the temperature where they can fly. So bumblebees are quite often seen sitting on a sunny wall first thing in the morning to build up their temperature so they can fly around.
That's
so there are times when bees are more likely to be at rest, but the only way you can really sort of predict that is just by watching carefully what they do.
Yeah, that's a good tips, actually. Yes, you're right. I have noticed that. As you say, in the morning, you often see bees just sitting in the sun, just warming up. OK, so is this the kind of thing that you think you could successfully do with children? We've got half term coming up.
Yes. So the Great British Bee Count is something that we aim to make something that anybody can take. Sorry, I stumbled over my words. I'll just start a sentence again.
OK.
We aim to make the Great British Bee Count something that anybody can take part in, and it's certainly something that children could contribute to on their own or with an adult. Many children will be very adept at using smartphones, being able to download free apps that they can use.
Yes.
Actually, a lot of children will be people that have the sort of the patience to sit around and just watch and see what bees are doing in their garden.
Yes, and as you say, when it comes to the technical side, actually, they'll probably be more adept at it than some of the rest of us will be. So that's a good point. This isn't the first year that the Great British Bee Count has taken place. Has there been any good take-up in previous years? And did people find something interesting? You know, is there any interesting facts you could share with us?
Yes, this is the fourth year the Great British Bee Count has been running. We've had in the past 300,000 records of bees submitted to us. So it's a powerful tool for collecting data on the distribution of bees and the kinds of areas that they're found. Interesting things that we found out previously, we found a wealth of information about the kinds of places that bees were visiting. So it turned out that allotments actually were places that we got a very large proportion of our records from. That could just reflect the fact that allotment holders are people who are more observant and notice the bees and perhaps feel more motivated because it's their crops that depend on the bees, perhaps more motivated to do something to help. But it's an interesting line of potential future inquiry, isn't it? The fact that allotments seem to be places that really are very fruitful and popular for bees. And
that's right. If the bees weren't there, then no matter how many people were spotting bees there, they wouldn't see them, would they? So there's obviously, there might be something in that. So, that is interesting, isn't it? So when does the Great British Bee Gate... It started last Friday, didn't it? When does it run until...
So it runs, the Great British Bee Count runs for the remainder of May until the end of June. So that's May 19th till June the 30th.
Okay.
We chose that period because this is the time when it's sort of peak bee season.
Yes, there does seem to be a lot out at the moment, which is great to see. And do you need us to, is there a minimum amount we have to do, or really are any of our bee spots valuable?
A single record is going to contribute something. It is best if it's backed up with a photograph. That gives us the means of verifying what kind of bee it is. But nevertheless, any record, even just one, is going to help build up the picture. But if you want to do 100, then brilliant.
Wonderful. Well, we hope that it goes really, really well. And we look forward to hearing perhaps next year how this year's bee count went and how it goes from there. So, Mike, thank you very much indeed for joining us.
And that was me talking to Mike Birkin, who is bee campaigner at Friends of the Earth. And that does sound like quite a good thing to do with the kids over half term. A bit of proper science and a bit of fun as well. Anyway, you can find the information about the Great British Bee Count and all the rest of the things from today's show on the environment page of the Radio Verulam website, where you can also listen at leisure to the podcast. We always love to hear from you, your suggestions about shows and things. Tweet us at rv_environment, email us at environmentonrv@gmail.com. I'll be here at the same time next week, so until then, thank you for listening.